Welcome to another Michigan Writers reading here at Michigan State University Libraries. Tonight we have Anita Skeen. Anita Skeen is professor of English at Michigan State University, where she teaches in the Creative Writing Program, Canadian Studies Program, and Women's Studies Program. Thank you for taking time before your reading to talk to us this evening about your work.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
In preparing for this evening, I read both of your books. I think you have three.
Yeah, the third one is very difficult to get anymore. Okay. Actually, the first one is difficult to get.
This one?
The Naiad one.
Each Hand a Man. And as I was reading them, I became so involved in them, I really forgot to take notes. So I'm going to be asking you perhaps scattered questions this evening as things occur to me. What struck me is that you are a woman poet who is also a woman's poet. You talk so well and so touchingly of women's relationships. Can you talk about that a little bit?
A little bit, maybe, I guess. In fact, just recently I was talking to someone, a friend of mine, and we were talking about joy and where one finds joy and how one finds joy, and particularly when you're in your early 50s, as we are, what you begin to think about and do. And I said to my friend something which I've always believed, which is that the greatest blessing of my life has been my friends and the people I've known, particularly the women. And I think the gifts of those friendships and the gifts those friends have given me are probably what has enabled me in many ways to write, period. Not just these poems, but to write. I love the natural world, as you know, from the poems, mm-hmm. and there mm-hmm. is nothing I would, or nothing that inspires me more, I think, than being out in the world with people I care about.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that comes through in the poems.
Well, it does come through, and perhaps why it's like a clarion to me is that I'm pretty much in the same position as you are, that same time of life, and the memories that you evoke are so on pitch.
Well, thank you.
I have neglected to tell you, or to tell our listeners about the books. The names of the books. We have Each Hand a Map by Naiad Press. This is the 1986. Is this your first or second?
That was the first one.
That's
mm-hmm.
the first.
Mm-hmm.
The book that just came out is called Outside the Fold, Outside the Frame. Just published. I have in my hand, fresh off the press, from Michigan State University Press. So that's partly what we're celebrating tonight, too. You've already alluded a little bit to what I was picking up so strongly. You love nature, you love relationships, friends. But you seem to be just a natural storyteller, too. Your poems take the shape of a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, your latest book, Outside the Fold, is perfect for this evening because there are great selections there for reading.
Thank you. It's funny, you know, I grew up in West Virginia, down in the mountains, and in a part of the country that people think of as full of storytellers. Although I came from a family that didn't tell many personal stories, they read to me a lot as a child. I've often thought that one of the reasons I became a poet was because of the influence of the church in my childhood
mm-hmm.
and the being read to so much from the King James Version of the Bible and the melodiousness of those passages and having to memorize them. And because I lived out of town and in an area where there weren't a lot of kids, I spent a lot of time alone in the woods. And the combination, I think, of the cadences of that wonderful poetry in the Psalms and Song of Solomon and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and my aloneness in some ways, I think, really contributed to both my wanting to write and my ability to do it.
Some of the central images, hands and maps and the color blue in hand, each hand a map.
I always want to call it a hand map. No one gets that book right. I've had it called every map a hand, every each hand. It's
like
funny.
A map.
And it's not a, you know, it's not an easy title, but the titles of both books come from lines within poems that are within the book. Mm-hmm. And I think a title both for a poem and for a book is really difficult. And trying to find one, particularly for a collection that speaks to, if not all the poems, but the majority of the poems in there, is really tough. And this book was called, The Outside the Fold, Outside the Frame, was called a number of things before I settled on this one. And I like this title. I'm glad I didn't use the other ones because they weren't nearly as good.
What was the other
one? Oh, one of them was Speaking in Tongues. And I chose that. There's the biblical influence, you know. But I chose that because in Outside the Fold, Outside the Frame, there are those voice poems that are not, poems that are not spoken in my voice, but the voice of the artist and the printer and all those.
Yes.
And so that was one of the titles. But I was just typing and typing and re-editing the poems, and I came across that line, Outside the Fold, Outside the Frame, and I thought, that's
Perfect.
It. That's
Perfect.
It.
Yeah. This is the Michigan Writers series, and you are, much of your poetry is about the Midwest, about the South, it's about Alaska and so on. How is, now that you've been in Michigan, this part of the Midwest, is it fitting into your poetry? You've mentioned it. You didn't neglect it entirely, but it hasn't risen yet to prominence.
You know, it's funny. I didn't think of myself as a writer. My undergraduate degree was in English literature, and then I got a master's in American literature, and then I was in the PhD program in Victorian literature before I really discovered I was a writer. And by that time, I was in graduate school at Bowling Green University in Ohio and was out of the mountains and out of my home. And after I got my degrees at Bowling Green, I taught there for a year, and then I went immediately to Wichita State in Kansas and stayed there for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And so the majority of my adult life has been spent on the plains and on the prairie. And I think there is a lot of that in the book. I just finished a novel that's set in Southern West Virginia, and it has a lot more of the flavor, I think, of the landscape of my childhood than these poems. But, and I think this happens to people as they grow older, I find myself returning more to some of those memories and some of that landscape. And I've been back to West Virginia. The next novel I want to write is also set in West Virginia, and so I was down there doing some research, and I feel in maybe some ways it's ironic. I spent so many years as a child trying to get out of West Virginia because it connoted to me hillbillies and lack of education and all of that. And then once I got away and had been out for a while, I thought this wasn't such a bad place after all.
No, it's family and memories.
Yeah, my family isn't there anymore, but my best friend that I met in first grade, Susan Watkins, she and I are, and she turns up in both books. She and I are still very much in touch with each other, and in fact, her daughter, who's now out in San Francisco, and I have become friends. So that's my West Virginia connection right now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned an unfinished novel and a novel in progress. Any news on...
Well, it's funny. You know, you talk about the poems being narrative. I guess my ideal poem is a lyric poem. I would love to be able to write the Emily Dickinson, the short lyric, the...
Oh, but you did. That parody of Emily Dickinson was just, it made me laugh out loud. It was so good.
Thanks. But I love the lyric, and I think poetry, I think real poetry is the lyric. And as I wrote a lot of the poems in Outside the Fold, Outside the Frame, they began to get more and more narrative. So I found myself with stories that wouldn't fit into poems, and that's why I began the novel. And I didn't intend to write a novel, I intended to write one story. And I wrote it, and everywhere I read it, people wanted to know more about those characters. So I thought, I'll do a trilogy of stories. And then after I had done those, I began to think, well, maybe there is a longer story here. And so I just kept writing and writing, and I got so interested in the characters. The novel's autobiographical in that it's set in the time I was a child and set in the place I was a child, but the incidents that happen are not incidents that happen in my life. Mm. But I loved writing it, and it took me, the only time I could write was in the summers, really, because of my teaching responsibilities and everything. So it's taken me 5 years, 5 summers to write it, but it is now finished. And the next novel I want to write, this is a coming-of-age story.
Now, did you write the trilogy? Is that three stories in one, or is that just the first of three stories?
They are in the novel.
Okay.
They're embedded in it. They don't go in that order anymore, but... As I said, it's a coming-of-age novel about a young girl growing up in the 50s and 60s in West Virginia. And the next one I want to do, there's a lot of glass blowing in West Virginia, and I've always been really interested in, and attracted to glass. And the main character of the next novel is a young woman whose grandfather is a glass blower. And she becomes an artist by association with all of these glass blowers in her family who don't consider themselves to be artists at all, but practical craftsmen, I guess, but not artists. So I can't wait to start doing some with her. I've just been thinking about her at this point and haven't written very much. So,
well, something to look for. I read in some of your, well, articles about your introduction that about the Ghost Ranch Conference Center. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yes. I would love to talk about Ghost Ranch. I could talk about Ghost Ranch forever, and I'll try not to, but this summer was my 20th year of teaching at Ghost Ranch, and I'm the director of their summer creative arts program.
Where is it?
It's in Abiquiú, New Mexico, which
so that
is...
that wasn't a misspelling.
No, everyone thinks I've misspelled Albuquerque, but it's Abiquiú.
Wildly misspelled.
Yeah, wildly. Or they pronounce it Abiquiqui, or... but it's where Georgia O'Keeffe lived and painted.
Uh-huh.
And she had a house on Ghost Ranch, and Ghost Ranch is thousands of acres, and she had three little acres right in the middle of it where she... painted. And when I first started going to the ranch, she was quite elderly then, but was still on the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told to leave her alone, and,
mm-hmm.
which we all did.
Mm-hmm.
But it's run by the Presbyterian Church as a conference center, and it's very non-denominational, and it's spiritual, but not religious in that sense. And it has become such an important part of my life that every summer, I cannot imagine a summer without Ghost Ranch. In the creative arts program in the summer, we have 10 artists, writer, collage, pottery, some of that changes, but 10 different artists who teach in that period of time. And then in the fall, we now have what's called the October Writers Workshop, and Marcia Aldrich, who's on the faculty here, also teaches in that, and we have, she does short fiction, I do poetry, we have playwriting, the novel, and creative nonfiction. And so we have a week down there with the five of us teaching, and it's only writers. And this is the fourth or fifth year for that, and I really look forward to that too. But Ghost Ranch is in the high desert. It's about 60 miles north of Santa Fe, and of course in the autumn it's stunningly beautiful with the aspen turning and the light and all that. In the summer, we've been in June for all these years I've been teaching, and now we're moving to the end of July. So I'm curious to see. They say it's not hotter than that. June is the hottest month, so because I was a little worried
so
about.
It's very hot.
It can be hot in the daytime, but in the evening, you know, it cools down and you wear blue jeans and a jacket.
But it's high.
It's high. It's about 6,800 feet. So.
Okay.
But it's a wonderful place, and anybody who is interested in going, I would love to send them information.
Now, who again goes to this? Are they students or
It's a wide range of people.
Related,
It was started, and I think it's very inexpensive as conferences and things go. And it was originally designed, Ghost Ranch was a nonprofit organization, and it was designed so families could come, and large families, and have an affordable summer vacation. Right. Ghost Ranch has now, Presbyterian Church has backed off in its funding as Ghost Ranch has become more self-supporting, and it is self-supporting now. But it is still an incredibly cheap 8 days for the fact that you get to work with nationally known artists in very small classes. And
that sounds
it's a wonderful
wonderfully
place.
Stimulating for,
very,
for
very
everyone. Well, let's get back to your poetry before we forget that, that's what we're looking forward to this evening is your reading. there's a lot of humor. There's whole sections of chunks, I should say, out of the various parts that are just full of this satirical humor. Is there a particular fondness for that?
Oh,
because in
yeah.
other places I see somberness, mm-hmm. but humor really.
Well, I love humor, and I love, one of the things I love about my friends is how funny they are. And I guess I do see a great deal of irony in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, just incredible amounts of irony. And sometimes that irony is funny and sometimes it's sad. So mm-hmm. I think those are the two sides of the coin. But I think you have to look sometimes in some of those somber situations for the humor in it in order to get through it.
Some of it is extremely clever, and the Emily Dickinson piece we mentioned earlier is
the Fixing the Moon poem, I think.
And Fixing the Moon, that was the one just previous.
Mm-hmm.
That was all Snipe Hunt.
Yes.
You were out looking for.
And I hope that section clues people in. We did snipe hunting when I was a kid growing up in West Virginia. And the poems in that section are sort of off the wall. The speaker who's eating animal crackers in her study and being consulted on the phone by a psychiatrist. So, you know, the absurdity. In drama, too, I like theater of the absurd. So I think I also see in life a kind of absurdity that often you can't resolve, so you have to do something with it. And thinking about the humor in it is both helpful and enjoyable.
What poetry are you working on now?
I've just finished this summer another manuscript that's called The Resurrection of the Animals. And it's about ready to go off to... I had a wonderful editor at MSU Press named Martha Bates. And she's interested in seeing that one, so I'm about ready to give it to her.
Oh, we look forward to it.
Thank you.
What you should be looking for is Anita Skeen's Outside the Fold, Outside the Frame. Just come out this week, September 1999, published by Michigan State University Press.
It's funny, when I got dressed tonight for the reading and then I held up the book, I looked,
oh,
I discovered I absolutely matched the cover. I thought, people won't believe that happened by accident.
Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.